Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 146 of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. I don't know really why I talked like a demon, but it was coming out of me. This is a very special episode of the podcast. And trust me, if you're a hockey fan or a sports fan or just fan of really good people, and if you're not, I don't really want you to listen to the podcast. We have a very good episode coming up. And we have a lot of sponsors that make this podcast possible. Now, instead of having me looked at strangely why I do these ads, I actually have my girlfriend Alex sitting next to me. She's going to try to help me with the ads today and prove that I am not autistic. I mean, I can read. Okay. So, Alex, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, the first sponsor on this podcast, they're coming off. They just won New Jersey's Best Brewery from NJ.com. That is Demented Brewing. We've been there several times.
Yes.
One of my favorite breweries in New Jersey to visit because they just have an awesome tasting room. They have things going on Tuesdays where they put things into a cask. They have barrel release programs. On Sundays, they release a new beer. This last Sunday, they just released Villa, their Belgian wit, on draft in the tasting room. And this coming Sunday, they're having a cask event at the brewery to celebrate their two-year anniversary. We've almost been together for a year now. I remember announcing their one-year anniversary.
This is true.
Yeah. They're going to have three variants of Double Dementia in cask. So that's three variants of their double IPA. Demented Brewing, give them some love at dementedbrewing.com. You like Demented Brewing, right?
I love Demented Brewing.
Yeah. Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the old bank building. I don't know why I'm talking like an old Nordic, like, priest or something, but take it away, Alex. What's going on, Demented?
I don't know, but I like it. So Manskirt Brewing has their Big Brew Sussex on Saturday, and they're hoping to get their barrel-aged Wee Heavy and Barley Wine into bottles this week, prepping for their fest on May 20th.
Yes. Manskirt Brewing, they're in the old bank, but they increased to 8 taps. They do seasonally inspired ales. They're just a lot of fun. And go see Joe Fisher in his manskirt. I am not wearing a skirt right now because I am not wearing pants. No, I lied. But go give them some love at manskirtbrewing.com. Instagram, Facebook, all that fun stuff. Adirondack Brewery, Alex, we were just there 2 weeks ago.
Yes, we were. It was amazing.
Always amazing. Located right in the heart of Lake George. I almost said Lake George, New Jersey. Lake George, New York. Right across the street is beautiful Lake George in the Adirondacks, my favorite region ever. They're going to be bringing their 5-tap beer trailer to Tap NY. I think it's Tap NY. Otherwise, it's Tapney, and that sounds weird.
Yeah, it's Tap NY.
At Hunter Mountain. So Hunter Mountain's awesome. Tap NY is the New York's largest craft beer festival and largest single state craft beer festival in the nation. They're going to be pouring their Puree Boysenberry, their IPA, the Angry Vestibular, their Baltic Porter, Tangerine Dream, and Bobcat Pilsner. This last trivia was their last one, but don't have no fear. They're going to be back in November. That is Adirondack Brewery. Check them out. Give them some love. Trivia Revolution. Alex, you ever played trivia before?
I have. Once
yes.
Or twice.
You've lost many times with Michael Berlew. Trivia Revolution fueled by craft beer. Last week we featured our first trivia question on the podcast, and we had a winner. They won a gift card to a New Jersey brewery. So check out Trivia Revolution fueled by craft beer. Final sponsor of the cast. Susan Robb, she helps us out, Alex. She is she's a speaker agent out of Toronto and a client partner with Center for Leadership Studies. This week on the podcast, we have Dave Andrechuk. You know who that is?
Yes.
Yes. Dave Andrechuk. She has no clue who that is. But Dave Andrechuk, if you're a hockey fan or sports fan, you should know who he is. One, he's a great guy, and that's the most important thing. But he's a borderline Hall of Famer. And most of all, which is important and something I love, he is a very charitable guy. He started his own foundation over 11 years ago in order to give back to the community. His mission is helping children reach their goals. They're run north of the border in his hometown of Hamilton, south of the border where he won his Stanley Cup playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know what the Stanley Cup is, right?
I do.
It's the best trophy in sports. You know that, right?
I didn't know that.
You know why it's the best trophy in sports?
Why?
Because they keep your name on it for eternity.
I mean, it's a pretty big cup.
And it's big. Like, you know what? Like, I love the World Cup. I love soccer. But the World Cup is kind of like it's like a gallon of milk. It's not much bigger than that. Whereas the Stanley Cup is like lifting, it's like lifting a child above your head when you win.
Wonder how much that weighs.
But anyway, please enjoy the podcast. A very special episode. Dave Andrechuk of the Devils, the Sabres, the Maple Leafs, the Lightning, Stanley Cup winner. Just an excellent episode and an excellent man. With that, enjoy the podcast.
Bye.
Yay!
Go ahead. Hi, this is Dave Andrechuk, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Even shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Welcome back to episode 146 of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Wow.
And we are climbing towards episode 150, I guess, would be the next like checkpoint, you know?
I mean, is that really like...
No.
I mean, it's a milestone, but at the same time, does anybody go, 150?
You mean like when we went 50?
Well, that was cool.
Yeah, but it was also tongue-in-cheek, the whole thing.
Yeah. I was for real.
Yeah. I always hope people recognize that on that episode. Like, we weren't really celebrating 50 episodes. And we had all the call-ins. Congratulations. That was pretty funny.
Did Watson say 50-year anniversary or something?
Nobody knows what he says. But anyway, welcome back. Things have been going good with the podcast, and we want to thank you, people who are tuning back in, and welcome people who are just tuning in. It's funny, 2017 has turned out to be a very great year for the podcast. I feel like we've been very on fire guest-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because right before the new year, we were kind of going through, like, not a lull, like, quality of the show ever, I don't think, but, like, a lull, like, planning things and a lull, like, getting things
passion
together. And it seemed a little harder, but I feel like we're reinvigorated, fired up. The numbers are up. We found some new outlets for the podcast, which always helps. Gotten to talk to some really amazing people that I never thought we'd talk to. I mean, going back last week, if you didn't hear last week's episode, Chris Ballew from the
President of the United States of America.
Not Berlew. We hear enough of him. But Chris Ballew for the President of the United States of America. We had a really awesome interview with this guy, Mike Holstein, who you just got to listen to it, from the Green Bank Observatory. The week before that, we had people from an island. week before that, we had Victor Wooten. So a lot of different things going on. And it's funny because sometimes I get down on myself, like, oh, my God, we don't have a guest. But I think that's just pushing yourself, like, oh, we don't have a big guest or whatever. But if I go back and look, we would go two episodes sometimes without guests in the past.
Easily.
Like, you know, so it's like you try to keep things in perspective sometimes. But
yeah.
I'm talking today, which probably wasn't the best idea. You ever eat so
much? That's what you tend to do on a podcast.
You ever eat so much pineapple that your tongue hurts?
Pineapple that your tongue hurts?
Yeah.
You know you have to peel it, right?
No, like the acidity. Like,
oh, okay.
I ate like almost an entire ball of pineapple before because I was hungry when I got back from work. And
now, do you get it pre-cored? And
I usually don't, but this time it was like it was $5 and it looked delicious. And like sometimes I look at it, I'm like, does this look like it's dry or bad? But I usually cut it myself.
Okay.
But I don't core it. I have like a technique that I just cut the edges off.
You have a pineapple technique.
A pineapple technique.
Oh, why don't you share with our listening audience?
I take the pineapple and I cut the...
That's a good start to your pineapple
I cut
technique.
The stem off. I guess you call it the stem, the leafy part.
Yeah.
And then I cut the bottom off, like the round part, so I slice it like the end of a... like an apple, so like the bottom, like little... round part. So then I take
So it can stand.
Yeah. So then I take it and I let it stand flat, and I carve the the rind, I think it's the pineapple rind, off like straight down. Like it's almost like an octagon, a pineapple, when you get it open. Like the, like it's either 6, 8,
every
7.
Time I watch UFC, I'm like the big pineapple
They're
baby.
Fighting in the middle of the pineapple. Who fights in a pineapple? Under the ring. And, yeah, I carve it down, and then I cut those pieces, like, trim them like a turkey almost, and then I cut them all in sections. I think I do pretty good with the pineapple, I'm not going to lie. Maybe I'll make a video, like, how to cut a pineapple.
God Brennan, pineapple cutter.
Well, it's funny, I took pineapple.
It'd be great if that got, like, 7,000 hits and our podcast gets 50.
Yep, yep. Well, that's pretty much that's what happens. And I took lunch today. I took some pineapple along with some other things, and I put it in a plastic bag, which is what I normally do. Now, when you
it's weird when you walk in with a handful of pineapple.
Well, I was thinking about my lunch bag, and I'm like, I'm using like a ShopRite bag, you know, a plastic bag. And I'm thinking it's a little bit white trash, man. I think it's like think about an age where I got to step it up, maybe a little bit, not quite like lunch pail. But
I don't know. I don't blink an eye to that.
No.
Why? What do you care?
I don't know.
If you're not bringing anything home, what does anybody care that you got a little orange bag in there?
I know, but I'm just like, I feel like we are like carrying my plastic bag of lunch.
I just go in, chuck it into the fridge, and do my work.
You're a plastic bag guy? Just straight up?
If I do, I mean, I got to get back in the habit of bringing in lunch.
Well, it's funny. I did that today because I'm like, dude, I buy lunch way too much. Like, it adds up. When you, like, look back and you're like, man, $11 per day or whatever it is. And, you know, by the time you get a drink or a coffee and, you know, I get coffee every morning. Like, you know, you're spending $20 a day before you know it on food and drinks. Easily. And, you know, that's a... You know, on a normal work week, that's almost $100, $400 a month just feeding my fat ass lunch. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I got to get back to. I was on a roll where I was making like salads on Sunday night, like making chicken and everything. And then like I would do like 3 days of salad or whatever, like with chicken and eggs and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then go out on Fridays and then Thursdays, whatever. But like I've been going out too much. I've been really trying to like watch what I eat too, like just to try to. You know, cut a couple LBs here and there. But, yeah, I was thinking about the my lunch bag. I don't know. I think maybe it's time. Like, I don't want a full-out, like, lunch sack or lunch, like a design lunch box. But what is the alternative for a guy? Like, do you get, like, a lunch satchel? Like, what are the options out there? I'm going to type this in right now. How do you do lunch? Like, do you bring lunch? I'm going to look up lunch.
I mean, when
lunchbox options for men. Let's check this out. Okay.
But please say this leads to a guest.
No. No. But yeah, go ahead. Like, how's your lunch technique?
My lunch technique is just I usually get stuff on a Sunday, like some minimal stuff, piece of fruit, whatever I'm going to make for sandwiches, like a Fiber One bar and a drink, and I shove it into a ShopRite bag and I go to work. I don't care. I mean, the second I walk in the door, fridge is right there 10 feet away from me, so I just shove it in there. I don't...
Now, are you like a sandwich guy? Like a sandwich to go to lunch?
I mean, usually when I pack lunches, I do that from time to time. If I make something and I have excess and I actually remember to bring it, I'll bring it into work, but... I mean, there's not. I mean, like I said, lately I've been just eating out way too much. I mean, I don't eat a lot. Like, even if I go out, it'd be like one slice of pizza or.
Yeah, see, I like a big lunch. That's the problem, too. Like, I like lunch. I really enjoy lunch. It's probably my favorite meal. It used to be breakfast when I was a kid. Now I'm like, I really enjoy a nice lunch.
Well, I think what it is, like, with my job, I mean, the way they actually frown on you that you go out to lunch and you. Oh, you know. I had to cancel a 12-to-1. Meeting today just to say no, that's sort of when I eat. So like one of my bosses, it was like, oh, but your calendar shows available. Yeah, there's a reason why it's available because I ain't around to do anything. So
yeah, see,
so I get used to the all right, they're gonna be little crybabies, so let's run out, grab something quick and shove it down our throats and get back in like a half an hour.
All right. I just stumbled upon nextluxury.com.
Oh.
These are 12 manly lunch boxes for men.
Is it flannel?
The first one clocks in at $35. The elite design Cypress lunch tote.
Okay. Tell me about it.
I mean, you can. I'll turn the computer here so you can peek. It's not bad. It's not my style. It looks a little bit like a canvas bag almost.
Looks kind of boring, to be honest with you.
Yeah, a little boring, but it's water resistant, easy to clean.
Who's swimming with their lunch?
once your snacks and drinks are packed in the tote, roll the top down, secure it to the bucket closure.
There is a bear on it. That should count as bear news.
Then we got the $22 built neoprene spicy relish lunch tote. That one's pretty sleek.
Okay.
You know, looks kind of like...
nothing where it would... I mean, it's all right.
It's almost like... It looks like the material that a scuba suit is made out of. It's kind of manly, I guess. Let's go down. Ooh, $18. That's ugly. The Igloo 9-can Max Hold Wartman's meal to go manly lunchbox.
Anybody with a lunch with 9 cans in it should really consider something.
I can think of a few people I know who might 9-can it. But it looks kind of like
9-can Dave.
It looks like a toolbox, kind of.
It looks like something you would bring your lunch in from in like the 80s.
Yeah, and the zippers almost look like there's a lock on it, which
like a legit padlock.
Which, if you're doing 9 cans, you might need the lock. You don't want someone
knowing. You ain't getting in there, HR.
now the $15 Igloo Max Cold Vertical Dual Cooler. That one's. Kind of, it's got a handle on the top. Extra insulation is incorporated into the design.
Okay.
Ooh, the L.L. Bean Manly Lunchbox. That one's pretty standard.
It kind of looks like a book bag, though.
Yeah, like a mini book bag. Mm. It almost looks like one of those suitcases that roll
a little bit. I mean, that's another thing to add to it. If you're throwing it into the fridge, somebody looks in there and like, what the hell is in here?
The Polar Camera Cooler Bag. Okay. This one's got Brooklyn written all over it. It's like a hip. It's got like leather straps and
alternating colors,
interchangeable Velcro compartments.
Oh, that's key to my lunch.
The Satchi Black insulated canvas messenger tote. So it's like a messenger bag, but for your lunch.
Ooh, you want to send notes.
This one's for you, buddy. The Mon Bento MB Original Bento Lunchbox. It looks like a cooler, like a. I don't know. It almost looks like a gaming system.
It kind of looks like those movies in the future where it's like you have this vaccine in there and you press a button and then like smoke comes out of it.
That's 30. That's clocking in at $36. Okay. So is the packet. Here we go.
All right.
The Stanley Classic Lunchbox for Men. $40. Mm. It looks industrial.
It's a toolbox.
It's a toolbox for your lunch. This is. Now I'm thinking. I show up to work with that. They're like, that guy's got lunch.
That man's manly.
That guy. Look at that guy's lunch. Look at the care he puts in daily for his lunch.
That sandwich has got some spicy mustard on it.
Wilkin orange. It looks like a suitcase again.
Yeah.
Mm. Thermos. When's the last time you drank out of a thermos? $46. Woof.
May have been fifth grade. Nah, not even that late. Maybe third grade.
But my point is, maybe it's time for me to upgrade. Maybe I'll put a survey up on my Twitter or something.
What should Scott do?
Yeah, which lunchbox I should get. And I'll purchase it and write a review on the lunchbox.
You got to take pictures at work. Yeah. You know, it's over your shoulder and all. Somebody's hungry.
I just imagine showing up with that big toolbox one. People be like, oh my God. Like, that one looks like more like a tackle box. But, you know.
See, I think you can pull off like a little character stuff. Like, if you're in a bad mood and the kids are like loud or whatever, you just stroll into the class and all, you just throw that toolbox down.
Slam your lunch down.
Everybody's quiet. They're looking. They're wondering what's going on. And you just slap it open and you bring out like a pepperoni hoagie or something and then start chomping down.
The worst would be like if you
We're going to math.
If you packed a salad and you slammed it down and lettuce blasted everywhere.
Oh, my dressing! My raspberry vinaigrette's all over it.
The dressing gets everywhere, man, when you spill it. But I know this is epic radio right now.
I know. Hashtag thermoses.
Epic freaking radio. But we do have.
We should do that as a bit. Epic radio. And then our dumbest conversations ever.
Talk about like jars. Like The coupons, new coupons in the news. But
so I got a new mouse, Scott.
Hockey playoffs are right in the midst of everything. And, of course, as usual, the NHL playoffs are World War III. Mm-hmm. People are getting hit in the face with pucks, breaking jaw. It's just the NHL playoffs stacked against any other playoffs is like it makes things look like child's play sometimes.
I think they're one of the few sports left where it's like you get in, you got a shot. If you're hot, you've got a chip on your shoulder, you can take out that one seed.
Yeah, I mean, NBA and NHL are going. NBA, you know what two teams are going to be there. Mm-hmm. NHL, it could be any of, well, now we're down to eight.
Yeah. But MLB, yeah.
MLB, yeah.
A couple times a wild card.
But MLB is so annoying because those guys are such baby. Like, they're such wusses, man. The money's guaranteed, so they are never in a rush to play. Mm-hmm. They're never in a rush to get back or play through injury. The Mets have five guys out. It's 18 games.
In yeah, four of them was in that one Phillies game. It's like from a butt off.
Yeah.
That
one. They got pitchers pinch hitting all weekend. And they're, you know, like,
yeah,
and
Wheeler had a double.
Yeah, it's just, it's so, they're just wusses. Cracked fingernails, knee infection. But it, if I was them, you know, if you're a pitcher and you go out on Tommy John and you already signed a big contract, it's like there's 2 years off, you know, guaranteed money.
I never get that when they're like, oh, he's got a partial tear. He's going to take a couple months off and try it again. No.
Yep.
No. And everybody who comes back is usually 10 times better after they come back.
It just baseball is a shame because the union is so strong that they don't, the money is always guaranteed. Football, it's like, even football, you look at those linemen playing with like their arms taped into their broken hands, oh, and they got like the a big best Q-tip looking thing on their head. It's, but anyway, the point I wanted to make was that in a few minutes, we should have a NHL legend calling the podcast, Dave Andrechuk.
Oh.
Who, borderline Hall of Fame. Played 20 years in the NHL. I think more than that.
So, I think he started in 79. I mean, that was in the minors, but God. Yeah.
But he was he played about 4 years in the Devils, which that's where I fell in love with him. He's a great player. I believe he leads the league in power play goals of all time. So
yes, he does. 274.
That's a lot of power play goals. Mm-hmm. Hello.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Dave.
Yes, this is Dave. How are you?
Dave, thank you so much for popping on the show for a few minutes. I really appreciate it.
Excellent. Excellent. Not a problem.
It's awesome, man. Well, I'm Scott, and this is my cohort, Mike Berlew, here.
Evening, Dave.
Okay, Mike. How are you?
Doing well, my friend.
Dave, it's a, first off, one, it's like a, it's a, really is an honor having you on. You know, I grew up watching hockey. I'm a New Jersey-born guy, so it was Devils all the way for me. And, you know, you spent a good, I think, what, about 4 years with the Devils?
I did. I'll tell you what, it was awesome in New Jersey. You know, good teams. Unfortunately, we didn't win. I was kind of,
I always thought your team was going, I thought that team had some magic in it.
Mm. I totally agree. Totally agree. We were, you know, we ended up losing a one seed to an eight seed in Ottawa.
Yeah, yeah.
That 1 year, and that, you know, was a shocker to all of us. So,
and no Ottawa, doubt, Ottawa gave you guys fits for those couple years. It always seemed like Ottawa's right in the mix of like messing things up for us or you.
And you know what? When they talk about a matchup, right? Like, you know, you got to match up against the teams. I mean, that was just not a good matchup for us when I was there. But I really enjoyed my time there, to be honest with you. My wife, my family. You know, we lived in North Jersey. It was fun. It was really fun. The 4 years I was there was good times for us, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think of that period of the team, and it was, you know, after so much success, which was amazing as a Devils fan. Because, I grew up as a Devils fan where everyone made fun of us, you know, up until 94, 95. Everyone was Ranger fans, and the Devils were still finding their footing in the area, you know, of like if they were going to have real fans. And then that team came along, you know, the Danicos, the Brodeurs, the McLeans, the Elias, all of them, you know, eventually came along. And it's just amazing. We had 20 years of great hockey.
Well, and I can't agree with you more. I mean, I got to New Jersey, and I remember being at the next to the practice rink, and like there were Ranger fans everywhere. And mm-hmm. it was shocking that, you know, you're right outside of South Mountain, their practice facility, and, you know, they're all Ranger fans there. Yep. I think they were still trying to find their identity. I know Ranger fans are everywhere in this world. There's no doubt.
It's an unfortunate thing, yes.
It is. But at the same time, I mean, I was shocked that, you know, the Devils weren't getting more love from being, like, right there. And I think the Cups and how well they have played and how great that organization was, they kind of probably turned the tide a little bit, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny now – not funny, but it's nice to see now there's definitely finally, I would say in the last 7 years, there's definitely a home advantage now. It's always a sea of red. Yeah. I no longer go to a Devils Rangers game and I'm sitting in rows of Ranger fans, like wanting to kill myself. Mm-hmm. And it is nice to see that the team finally has an identity, and it's kind of sad because they are really bad right now.
Yeah.
A lot of building
to
do.
I'll tell you what, like, you know, being here in Florida.
Yep.
And us being, you know, we're in the same kind of boat, right? Like, mm-hmm. a lot of teams that come in here, fans travel to Florida to see their team play. And I know as a player going through that where, you know, there's sometimes you're playing the Detroit Red Wings and the whole building is red, you know, and you're playing at home, right? So there are teams that travel very well, and it's the original six teams, and, you know, they've got some tradition, and people are all over the country, and it's hard to change that whole mentality, right? And, you know, I think we've done a fairly good job here where, you know, we've now had some success, and, you know, people are jumping on board, and, you know, same as the Devils, right? You get a little success, and those away fans just kind of stay away from, you know, wanting to go to games. And But that's the NHL. I mean, you go to Nashville and they're playing Chicago and there's lots of Chicago fans there. So I don't think it's unlike anywhere else in the country.
I mean, that's kind of an interesting, I mean, obviously we'll ask you a lot of questions about your career, but I mean, it's kind of weird how you've been in hockey since 79 and you win it with a team that wasn't even born the day you came into hockey and loving it. I mean, how does that feel to you, the way with the growth is going and the bases, the fan base is coming to be, and now we got a new team coming in Las Vegas next year? Do you see the tradition in these new teams, or is it just kind of more, I wonder if you're flooding the market?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, and you're absolutely right. I mean, let's face it, you know, when I came here to Tampa, you know, did I really expect to win a Stanley Cup? Absolutely not. But in our case now, you know, we're going to be 25 years next year. I think you're now in that second generation of fans, right? Like, some of these new teams, they need to get to that second generation.
It's completely
true. We have kids now. You know, we have kids now that grew up in Tampa Bay. All they know is Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
You know, 10 years, 15 years ago, it's the parents telling the kids about it. You know what I mean? And I think that's a big thing. It's a huge thing. And, you know, for me, you know, when I signed here as a free agent, there's no way that I expected to, you know, to win a Stanley Cup. I think after I got here, I was only here a short time where I realized that, you know, geez, we got lots of good players here. Lots of good young talent. And
Lightning's another team that just always beat the Devils up, man. Always. Yeah,
that's true. It's true. We had a great series, you know, against them the year before we won.
Yep.
You know, we ended up losing. You know, the Devils went on to win the Stanley Cup that year.
Woo!
But to me, that was where really our whole organization changed, you know, losing to the New Jersey Devils. And I remember standing up in the room and telling all the guys that, you know, I mean, we played a really good team. And, you know, we were obviously just a young, upcoming team.
Yeah.
But we weren't ready to win. You know, they were, you know, they did some things in the playoff series that young teams, you know, that don't do. And, I mean, you know, maybe I can, you know, relate it to Washington against Toronto this year, right?
Right.
You know, Washington has been down that road before.
Mm-hmm.
Even though those games are close, I mean, there's still things in that series that you wouldn't do the next time around. And that's what we did against New Jersey. And I think from that point forward, that day that we lost, we were determined that we wanted to be back to that same spot again. And, you know, we certainly got there and plus some.
Okay. Dave, like, you type in your career stats, and the graphic that comes up of how many years you played is just it. I actually have to scroll down on the webpage I'm looking at.
I mean,
you were blessed. I guess 82 is when you got your real start. 82 to 2006. You know, playing. We don't have to go through everything, but playing with the Sabres, the Maple Leafs, the Devils, the Bruins, the Avalanche, the Sabres, the Lightning. How on earth did you, one, manage not only to just stay healthy, but how did you manage to be a productive player? Your name pops up in so many different stats, and you know, I got the thing with the, I guess you are, you, I think you're still in the lead, right, with power play goals of all time.
Correct. Yep.
I mean, that, we'll get to that in a second.
Well, to be honest,
how did you manage to stay productive and healthy?
Well, you're right. I mean, the good fortune of staying healthy, no major injuries. I had a few with the Devils,
Yep. You
know, off and on. I had some injuries in Buffalo, but nothing too major. I think you just, it's the love of the game. I think you do right. You fall into the right situations. I think, you know, especially near the end of my career where, you know, I went to coaches that knew who I was, were willing to take me. You know, and I truly believe that I never really priced myself out of the market. I think some guys price themselves out of the market. You know, for me, it wasn't about money. I never really played for the money. I just wanted to play the game, and especially near the end of my career. And I remember going to Boston, you know, in 99, 2000, and my agent saying, well, how much money do you want? And I was like, well, how much do they want to give me? And it didn't matter to me. I just, you know, I continued to play. And I think that's what helped me, you know, continue to play that long, you know, the 23 years that I ended up playing. And I am very, very proud of the games played. That's something that, you know, a lot of people don't talk about. To me, it's
1,639, according to Wikipedia.
Yep. And to me, I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of that stat. I mean, I believe that I should get the goals because I am a goal scorer and I should have that many goals. But I think the games played to me is something that a lot of people overlook. You know, it's the dedication to train every year. You know, it's your family putting up with you on the road every year. A lot of factors go into it, and I am proud of the games played. I know it doesn't get talked about a lot.
It
should. You know, when people say, you know, what kind of player was he? They never really say, you know, well, he played this many games. To me, I'm really proud of the games played. And I think if you ask any player in the NHL, they would say the same thing. If they say, well, geez, he played 1,600 games, you know, that's a hell of a lot of games where, you know, you're not 100% every night. You got to play injured. You got to put up with a lot of stuff that happens in your career. And for me, you know, like I said, starting in 82 and ending in 06, I'm proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, looking at your games played, like just scrolling down, there's only like 95, 96 and like 92, 93 and 99 where you really seem to have suffered some injuries. But the rest, you're all pretty high up there in games played. How much commitment as fans don't see how much work goes into, like, you know, between the off season and the training and whatnot. Are you working all year round? Do you give yourself a break, especially after the, you know, you had a lot of teams that went on playoff runs?
Yeah, no, I can't say that, you know, in the 80s that I was so intermittent, right? Like, definitely in the 2000s, you know, and the way these kids are trained now, it's a full-time job. It's definitely a full-time job. You cannot take any time off. I know that, you know, I talk to a lot of our young kids now that are on our team, and they ask, you know, how the hell did you play till you're 40 years old? You know, a lot of it is dedication. A lot of it is, you know, knowing your body and getting ready to play. So, you know, I think as fans look at players, that's one thing that, you know, maybe is overlooked is, you know, their commitment to the game and what they have to go through to get ready to play a full season. And, you know, for me, I just love playing. I love practicing. You know, I was basically, as you said, injury free. And, you know, sometimes you got to play through some things. And there's no way you could say that after 23 years, you know, that I didn't play hurt some games. And there's no, which I did.
Playing for that long, you must have gone through so many teammates. What would you say was your favorite or your most surprising teammate that helped you out getting to be the player that you were?
Well, I think it all goes back to when I started, right? You know, as an 18-year-old kid, you're going into Buffalo, and I look back on those players that got me down the right path, to be honest with you. And, you know, I can talk about a lot of great players that I played in the 90s and the 2000s that were, you know, Hall of Fame players that I played with that definitely made me better. But I look back to the Gilbert Perreaux and Craig Ramsey, Jim Schoenfeld, Mike Foligno, Dale McCourt. You know, these are guys that when I started playing as an 18-year-old kid, you know, they took me under their wing and, you know, got me going down the right path. So I give a lot of credit to some of those older players in my early days in Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine. I would love to see a stat of how many teammates you've had.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah, thousands.
You'd love to see a spreadsheet on that. Like, it's got to be crazy. But you had so many different runs with different teams and whatnot. Is there one team that you identify with the most, or is every team, like, because you – I guess you had pretty good chunks with most teams other than the Bruins and Avalanche. You had, you know, more than 3 years on every team, 4 or 5.
Right.
Is there any team that stands out to you as like,
well,
you know,
I think you always go back to the team that you were drafted.
Yeah, Buffalo.
You know,
right?
I obviously spent a lot of time in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of playoff success. Mm-mm. Unfortunately, some very good teams, but not a lot of playoff success. And, you know, I think, you know, I obviously spent the most time there in Buffalo, and even going back for a second stint, I had some really good success with Toronto.
Yep.
And 250 goal seasons there. I don't know if there's a player in the league, you know, that played 15 years in the NHL and was an hour from his hometown.
Yeah.
I'm very, very fortunate.
That's
very,
true.
Very fortunate.
Are you still out there?
Yeah, I know. Being in Hamilton and then, you know, playing in Buffalo for that amount of time and then playing in Toronto, you know, two teams that I watched growing up. So very fortunate. You know, can you identify with one team? I don't really want to be honest with you.
Of course.
I had good times in a lot of cities, you know, Denver included, and I was only there for a playoff run. But going back, you got to say that Buffalo was a team that, you know, I drafted me and I was there for, you know, almost 13 years.
Interesting. Yeah. That's kind of what I assumed. But
he wanted you to say the Devils. No. Just say the Devils.
No. Yeah. Just say it. Say it, Dave. Wait till you hear the audio of this. You're going to be like, yeah, I identify with the Devils.
Yeah, there you go.
Insert audio.
I never knew I had that Jersey accent.
But Dave, you played so many games of hockey, and I was talking about the physical aspect of the game and how you stayed healthy and whatnot. What about the mental aspect? And obviously, you must have still—you even said you weren't really playing for the money and whatnot. The mental aspect and your drive, I would assume, to also try to win the Stanley Cup had to be there, but. How do you stay interested in the game, and how did you stay focused? And was it all about just enjoying playing the game, or was it focused on a goal?
Well, no, great question. Great question. You know, I think a lot of it is, you know, it starts with your upbringing. You know, I came from two, you know, still working parents. I think it's, you know, the work ethic in our family, you know, has gone down to me. I definitely the love of the game to stay in it. I think a lot of it is, you know, you have to try to be better each year. I know every year that I went through, you know, I was never satisfied with, you know, 30 goals. I wanted to get more the next year. How can I get better the next year? And it seems to go quickly, but at the same time, I mean, your mental part of the game is, you know, you're never satisfied. You're never satisfied with that last season, and you always want to get better the next year. You get back in the gym and you want to train and you want to, you know, get better the next year. And I think that's the mental part of the game that, you know, good players always really have. You know, they're never satisfied with their game. They feel they can get better at all times. And, you know, and I believe that, you know, when you look back on my career, you know, somebody says to me, hey, great, you had 30 goals. Well, no, I want 40.
Right.
And, you know, and that's kind of the attitude that you have to have to stay in this league.
Yeah, I mean, you finally got to the Lightning, where you were obviously brought in, and I think even to the Devils, you were brought in as a veteran leader who's been around, who can obviously still contribute. But, you know, at the Lightning, the tail end was, you know, you were an older guy who could bring a ton of leadership. And it even says in one thing I read that you could have been traded and you refused to be traded, stating that your work was not finished. And lo and behold, in, what, 2004, win the cup. What is it like for a boy, you know, playing hockey, I'm sure, since you were, God knows when you started, but your whole life and finally achieving that, obviously towards the tail end of your career, is it everything that you imagine or is it more than that?
Oh, no, it's way more. It's way more.
That's
and,
awesome.
And, you know, I think you, and this is one of the things that happened near the end of my career is, you know, they're bringing in not just for your talent, you know, it's for your character and who you are, what you bring to the rink. And, you know, if coaching staffs know you, you know, my GM at the time was Rick Dudley. Rick and I were together in Buffalo. And, Craig Gramsey was the assistant coach. You know, we were roommates in Buffalo. John Tortorella had a quick stint, you know, in Buffalo as an assistant. He knew who I was. So, you know, I think they really thought about bringing in this guy. That, you know, maybe he's not going to contribute to what he's done in the past, but he's going to help our young kids. And I took that on as a challenge. I really took that on as a challenge. I took it on as a challenge to turn an organization around, not necessarily win a Stanley Cup, but make us respectable, right? Like make, you know, so people know you're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that's kind of what I did. And after getting, you know, into Tampa and then seeing the young guns that we had, you know, in St. Louis, Le Cavalier, Richards, you know, Javi Bull and Boyle. I mean, all young guys that went on to have really, really good careers.
Yep.
I wanted to stay. I really wanted to stay. And I know that Jay Feaster was the GM at the time. We came to the deadline. You know, he called me and said, you know, Montreal wants you, you know, for the playoffs. And I said to him, I says, you know, Jay, if it's all right with you, I'd like to stay for another year. And I just felt like this team was good. Did I feel like we were going to win? We all want to win the Stanley Cup, no doubt. You know, do I think our chances are better? Yes. I don't think you know, as all the players in the league will tell you, it's pretty hard to win. You don't just, you know, go out and win. But for me, I took it on a challenge to get these young guys going down the right path. And you know, thankfully with John Tortorella and his staff and, you know, the leadership group that we had, you know, we turned the ship and you know, we ended up, you know, winning the cup with them.
Was there a goalie that you had a rivalry with or you just loved to score on that just, it would just add it to, I mean, everybody you
played.
Also vice versa, there a goalie that shut you down? All that, like that, you just couldn't figure out.
Well, I have to say it's Patrick Waugh, to be honest with you. Like, you know, obviously
the
great rivalries between Buffalo, exactly. You know, and I played with some really good goaltenders. You know, the fortunate thing for me is I ended up playing with Patrick. You know, even though it was a very short time, you know, he even talked about how he felt like I had scored a lot of goals on him. And I felt like he had shut me down all the time. So, you know, very good goaltender, very competitive. You know, I played with Dominic Hasek in Buffalo in 99.
Jesus,
you know, and that's a guy that, you know, super talented, you know, loved the game. Obviously a little unorthodox, but, you know, who cares? You stop the puck, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, oh, and then yeah, phenomenal saves, like ridiculous saves, yes. Mm-hmm. And we saw it every day in practice. So, you know, when fans saw it during the game, you know, we weren't shocked. We saw it in practice.
I mean, that
right?
guy would be when the, you know, when they use the expression like, "Oh, he was on his head all night." Like he was literally on his head, mm-hmm. like
literally, yes. You know, and he came up with saves, right? Mm-hmm. But then, you know, then you talk about Marty Brodeur, and you know, for me, there's no doubt in my mind he's the best ever. You know, just a super guy. We got along awesome.
That's awesome.
He was a guy that worked extremely hard in practice. He's a big time goaltender. He's a big game goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
He wants the pressure. And, you know, the 3.5 years that I spent with Marty, was impressive. Really, really impressive. And, you know, the Devils organization, yes, they had some good players. But, you know, they don't get the status they have if they don't have Marty Brodeur out there.
No.
I know that he wasn't getting a lot of shots under Jacques Lemaire in the system they played. But still, this guy was,
he was dominant.
He's the real
post-Jacques for many years after Jacques, you know, like.
Correct.
But he was like, it's funny, like me and my buddies always talk like how spoiled we were by the Devils, you know, like. We got the three cups.
Definitely.
We got to see, you know, even your teams post, you know, the cup runs, like they were good and entertaining and in the deep into the playoffs all the time. And you don't realize what you have until it's gone. I went to the game, whatever it was, three Saturdays ago to Patrick Elias's last, and it's just that was like the final nail, the final wave to that, you know, that era of the Devils. Yep. You know, he was the last one, and you know, between the Niedermayers and Stevens, and you don't even realize what you're seeing until you see a struggling team, and you're like, oh boy, whoa,
yep.
You know, or a new team, you know, and how much growing pains there are, and how much luck is involved, and health is involved, and.
I also look at them. I refer to the Devils a lot with our organization and how things were done. I know, you know, knowing Lou going to Toronto, you know, nothing surprises me of what the success they've had. You know, I have the utmost respect for Lou Lamoriello and what he's done did with the Devils and coming in there. You know, on the outside looking in, you know, people think he's, you know, this hard ass that, you know, is, but this is a guy that knows how to win. He puts a winning team together. And, I still believe that Jacques Lemaire is probably the smartest coach that I've ever been around. When you look at his resume, it speaks for itself.
It does.
He just said some things that everybody related to, and, you know, not the prettiest way to win games. But at the end of the day, we're driving back from Philly and it's 2-1. Or we're driving back from the Long Island, it's 3-1. And we're winning games every night, and that's the bottom line. And it was fun to be around. I know I see Jacques a lot now here in Tampa. He's down here all the time. We chat about the Devils, and I know he respected me as a player, and I sure as hell respect him as a coach for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to ask you, what you said with Lou, I mean, just not only the teams he created, but, like, then I see a documentary like that one about him and Slava Fetisov, and it's like, that is just unbelievable, that story, him having, like, meetings with him secretly and making sure, you know, mics were on and all that, just unbelievable stuff there. But I wanted to ask you, me and Mike were just talking about this right before we got on with you. You have the playoffs going on right now, and the NHL playoffs are always a war of attrition. It's just, you know, it seems like as soon as that final game of the season ends, it's just, all right, it's WrestleMania, and it's just, unbelievably. Yep. It's just faster, harder. You know, guys are playing through injuries, and as hockey players, now I compare it to other sports like baseball. Like all this money's guaranteed, and it seems like these guys sit on injuries forever. Whether you want to say yes or no, it doesn't matter. But hockey players seem to play. They'll play with. You know, they knock teeth out of their mouth, and they're playing with pulled muscles and everything you can name under the sun. And I'm sure you've been through it personally. But why do you think that is in hockey, as opposed to maybe some other sports, and maybe also the way the league is structured?
Yeah, no, I think it really starts with tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it starts with where you know, listen, the guys in the 50s were doing it.
Yep.
And then the guys in the 60s were doing it, and they pass it on to everybody else.
Nice, man.
And that's where it really starts. I mean, that's who we are. That's who we are. That's our identity. And, you know, we're these guys that, are gonna play through anything. We want to, you know, obviously back in the early days, there wasn't a lot of money, and they played because they wanted to play. And I still believe in this day and age that, you know, these warriors that we have, that we see night in and night out, and we're watching, it starts, you know, when they were kids. And it starts, you know, when they first got to the NHL. So we should be very proud of that. We should be really, really proud of that, of how our guys go to war every day. And when you talk about, you know, the season ending, I mean, this is a marathon. This is not a sprint that we're watching.
Yep.
And it's tough. It's really, really tough. It's 2.5 months of hell every day, but it's so worth it at the end. And that's what our players fight for every day. And it's so cool to watch. I mean, we obviously would wish that we're watching our teams play, but at the same time, you know, I'm watching every game every night. Because it's just awesome. It really is.
What do you think about the current state of coverage with the NHL? Because it's a thing I notice that since they moved over to NBC Sports Network, lately I've been appreciating they've been putting them on all the series on like USA and their other networks. But it seems like the major sports networks like ESPN, you have to be a half an hour into SportsCenter before they'll bring up, oh, yeah, there was a hockey game last night, and it was the seventh game of the playoffs.
Yeah, it seems like the NHL's always been struggling to find a home, I feel like.
Since they left ESPN. Always, it almost seems like they stiffed them.
Like, where they went to that, what was it, the Outdoor Versus. Network? And
Versus
and all that. Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Dave.
Well, and at the same time, I think Gary Bettman has done a good job of, securing the dollars as you move forward. Yeah. And, do I think that, we're best served on ESPN? Yeah, probably. And maybe we will down the road. But I think NBC Sports has done a really good job of putting all these games on. You know, in Canada, maybe it's a different story, but for us down here, I think we still have the availability to watch every game. They're all on our networks. So you're able mm-hmm. to flip back and forth between games. No doubt. I mean, and that's changed a lot, right, over the years.
Yeah.
You know, basically in the mid 90s, the playoffs were determining when hockey was. You don't see that anymore. The right. Toronto Maple Leafs of 1993-94, we played 21 games in 42 nights. And it was every second night.
Yeah,
and we determined when the TV was going to be. Now when you look at even our series that we're going to start on Wednesday night, some of these teams have been off 3 or 4 days.
True.
In 1999, the Colorado Avalanche, we beat Phoenix. We were going to play Detroit. We had 12 days off in between the series. So
12 days.
Things
Jeez.
Have changed totally.
Wow.
I think that's when I have the utmost respect for those guys that played in the 80s and 90s when I played, because in playoff hockey, you were playing every second night and there were no days, there was one day off in between and then you were right back at it. So tough sledding for sure.
Yeah.
I think our hockey is better because you're giving guys days off. You know, when you look at even in 04, you look at that series against Calgary. I mean, God, it's so damn slow compared to today's game,
yeah.
Right? But at the same time, I mean, we were playing every other night.
It's true.
And yeah. You didn't get any days off. So
something the average person wouldn't even think about, you know, like it's like.
Yeah, it's tough to keep that pace up when you're playing every night and you're not getting any days off. So maybe it is a good thing that, you know, these guys have 3-4 days off, you know, in between rounds, and then you can get right back at it. So I like the coverage. I think that, you know, we get to see every game. We get the opportunity to see every game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a hockey junkie where I'm watching hockey until, you know, the Edmonton Oilers are done with their game late at night.
So I wanted to ask you. So, Dave, your name is on the Stanley Cup. It's never going anywhere. Your great-great-grandchildren will see it. You hear all these amazing stories of what people done with the Stanley Cup, whether it's from something having. I think Marty used to host like a rollerblade tournament with his family for the Stanley Cup, and I think Pantera threw it off a roof or something. I think it was Pantera. I don't, whatever it is. But all these guys do these amazing things. What did you do with the Stanley Cup, and what does it like mean? Like, did that bring that final closure to you as a hockey player?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, definitely closure for sure. I mean, your name is on the cup. They're never taking that away from you. I think I'm 65 years before, you know, that ring is off. And, you know, I'm long and gone before that, so I couldn't care less. It'll be in the Hall of Fame, right?
Yep. It'd be pretty bad if he was, like, 120 years old. And
no! Make the cup bigger. No.
Right. No, you don't want to make it bigger.
No.
You don't want to make it bigger. I think they got the great plan going where they, you know, they take that bottom ring off.
Yeah, it is.
And it's they smart. Put it in the Hall of Fame. I think that's very, very cool. You know, the one thing that, you know, fans need to understand is that the team that wins the Stanley Cup is the team that has to fly the Stanley Cup that summer. So, you know, our owner, our owner has to fly the Stanley Cup. So you basically have to set a schedule where you're moving across the country and, you know, you're not flying it from Europe to L.A. back to, you know, Buffalo, you know, back to, you know, Saskatchewan. You have to have a schedule where all these guys fall into place. And I know that when we won in 04, I know that Jay Feaster, which was the GM at the time, him and I sat down with, okay, how are we going to run this thing through all of our guys? And it was very, very cool, obviously. The majority of the guys had it for 24 hours. You know, since I set the schedule, I have it for 48.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'm fortunate.
Come on, what did you do with it? Come on.
Yeah, my 48. It started in my hometown of Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
I got the cup from Marty in Montreal the night before. So my cup guy showed up in Hamilton at about 9 in the morning. We started off at a children's hospital.
Oh, man.
I ran it through the hospital until 12, which was very, very cool. Like, you know, obviously, anytime you bring, you know, the cup into a room where the kid is, you know, not having his best day, you put a smile on his face. And
wow.
That was good times for me. I went from, you know, the hospital to my house that I grew up in. I had a block party there. I ended up having a parade. I ended up having a parade in Hamilton, which, you know, we went through the streets of Hamilton, 2-3 cars with the Stanley Cup. Obviously, being in Canada, people were going crazy for it, just to have a look at it. I ended up back at a hotel in downtown Hamilton. I basically had a wedding where I invited a whole pile of people. We all took pictures, and I kept thinking to myself, you know, at 11:30, 12 o'clock, I'm going to be upstairs in my room. Mm-hmm. And those times I just don't forget. Where I'm with my family and my friends.
That's awesome.
And the Stanley Cup. The next day we get up and we head to Buffalo. We cross the border, which was very, very cool because when I did tell the border guy that I have the Stanley Cup, We basically shut down the border for 15 minutes.
So they can see it?
I now can go across the border. I now can go back and forth across the border at any time I want, for sure.
Damn you, Andrew just, Chuck.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, we ended up in Buffalo. I started at another children's hospital there. I went to Buffalo Children's. I did that for my morning. My day in Buffalo was a little more family-orientated instead of city-orientated. We did a little pub crawl with the cop, unannounced to some bars that I would frequent.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Which was very, very cool. You know, you walk in to a guy that's known me for a long time, and I'm bringing the Stanley Cup. So,
drink specials out of the cup.
Yep. And then I ended up back in my house in Buffalo. And I had family and friends there. And then at 6 in the morning, it was gone. And that's really the last time that
that's
I've
awesome,
seen
man.
So,
that's amazing.
48 hours of just awesomeness.
Joy.
Nobody can replace that. It was so, so cool. I really, and anybody that was at any of my functions were just, it was, you know, I obviously it was a long wait for me, but, you know, well worth it.
Well, now, yeah, I mean, one day you will, like, you know, when you're old and gray, you will weigh, like, you know, I won the Stanley Cup and I've been on the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. You'll be like, which one?
Yeah, there you go.
Which one is topping the other?
When he goes to Border Patrol, it's like,
I
don't have a visa.
The podcast will still be current. So, you know, we're
Dave,
good with that.
It's never current. No.
No.
But I wanted to ask you, so that's a perfect segue into what I wanted to talk about. You brought it to the children's hospitals, which is awesome. Yeah. And I want to give big props to Susan, who put me in touch with you, which is thank you so much, Susan. Yeah. And thank you, Dave, obviously. But you have the Dave. You've done a lot of stuff with charity. If you Google your name in charity, even if you Google Dave Andrewchuk, certain charities come up, including the Dave Andrewchuk Foundation, which I know is something near and dear to your heart, obviously because it has your name in it. But I'm sure there's other reasons behind it. What is that, and what kinds of things are you doing?
Well, thank you for bringing that up, and. You know, to me, I'm very proud of it. You know, we started in 2005, you know, during our lockout. It was really when we had the idea of, okay, you know, I've won the Stanley Cup. And, you know, as you said, you know, you did all these great things with the Cup and you're bringing it to all these kids and what's next. And really, it's about my family. When you think about it, I really have two different foundations. I have one in here in Tampa and one in Hamilton. So,
right.
two different, you know, entities, but two great organizations that are, you know, putting smiles on kids' faces. And really that's what it's all about. You know, we raise money for minor hockey. I always want to give back to that, you know, that organization that I started.
Right.
You know, I really think that that's important. I think that, you know, when you're an 8-year-old kid and you're playing in that organization, and, you know, I played all the way there until I was, you know, 16 years old. And I'm really committed to giving back to what they're doing. And then after that, you know, it's really about children's charities. You know, and really when you think of what our foundation is doing, you know, it's a different charity every year. Mm-hmm. It's a different event every year. I really try to spread the love between, you know, whether it's pediatric cancer or whether it's diabetes or whether it's, you know, there's a lot of different charities that we go to. So I'm very proud of it. You know, we're continuing to grow every day. We're continuing to, you know, put our name out there and getting people to help us out. But for myself, my dad, my mother, you know, my wife and kids were real proud of it. And it's really a family foundation. It's not just myself. And I truly believe that, you know, this is another opportunity that my parents and my family can give back to, you know, the people that have supported us in the past. So we're really proud of it, and we're just going to keep moving forward.
Well, I mean, it's one that's amazing here, just because you could easily just go on your way and do your thing with the Lightning, and you know, like just ignore all that stuff. And
hell, he's got a bronze statue of himself. So.
Where is that again? The bronze statue?
It's in Tampa, right?
Oh.
Yeah, we very cool. Our ownership in Jeff Vinnick, about 5 years ago now, we put a bronze statue out on our plaza.
That's awesome.
You know, a lot of people talk that it's about me. It's really not about me. It's about that team and what our community went through to win a Stanley Cup. And,
awesome.
You know, many times I have fans coming up to me and saying, you know, where I was, what I was doing, and I walked by the cup, and it brought back these great memories. And you know, I walked by your statue, and I touched it, and I kept remembering back to those great times. So,
that's great.
Very cool of Mr. Vinnick and his, and you know, and our ownership group to do that for our team. And for me, it's pretty shocking at times when I walk by it after, you know, going into the office, and you know, I'm still living. And I have a statue. It's pretty cool.
And it actually looks like him, unlike the Ronaldo bust.
Yes, yes, the Ronaldo statue. Or if you ever go to Newark, Bayonne, New Jersey, and you look at the Chuck Wepner painting, which if you haven't, please Google it. It's like his body is painted amazing. And then it's like they got to the head and ran out of budget money and like had to finish it real quick. It looks like a cartoon. And it's Chuck Wepner. He's like the thing people know Bayonne, New Jersey from. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sad. But but what I was saying is like I love that here that you spread the wealth around. I run these little free comedy shows every month and try to pick a new charity every month and throw money that way. So it's good to hear it. I'm on the same page with you. I'm sure you have a great outreach, and I'd love to work with you in the future or whatnot and get in touch with you. But I don't want to take up all your time. But what I want one last hockey question for you. The power play goal thing. How the hell is one – it's almost a quarter of your goals, right?
Yep.
A quarter – no.
Well,
more, wait, more than
I
that.
I guess when you think back on it and I look back and, you know, at the goals that were scored and
it's kind of mind blowing that you have that many power play goals.
And, you know, listen, I had some years where, you know, you got 30 power play goals. I mean, which is, you know, unheard of in today's today's day and age, right? But at the same time, good players, great players that I played with.
Right.
There are times that I didn't do very much and got some power play goals. So
give yourself a little credit. Come on.
Well, you got to get there to do it. Yes, you do. You got to get there to do it.
274.
And at the same time,
42%.
I think Ray from Jr., you know, I was kind of that, I fell into that role. And, you know, maybe it was the size, maybe it was the reach, and just kind of relished that part of it. And, you know, I believed, you know, every day that you know, we played a game that if I got a chance, I could score. And, you know, I think that's part of it is, you know, believing in yourself and believing in your teammates. And it sure worked out well for me. And, you know, it's just that, as I told you, you know, I expected it to happen. I scored goals in junior and I wanted to score power play goals in the NHL. And,
yep.
And that's what happened. So we'll see. It was a very cool night that you know, I broke the record, and you know, Phil Esposito was in the building.
Yeah,
you know, Phil and I talked after the game. We took some pictures.
That's awesome.
And you know, Phil's one of those guys that doesn't give much people credit, but I think he was really proud that it was me that was going by his record, and he understood. He watched me play for 4 years, and it was a cool, really cool night. Very cool night, and. Again, a lot of great celebrations are not just about me; it's about my teammates.
Yep, awesome.
And we all celebrate together, and we did that with the power play record for sure.
Yeah, one more question for you: is it kind of weird? There's a story out there that you made Kiefer Sutherland put on a dress for David Letterman, and it wasn't even you.
It was not me. It's the other Dave Anderchuk.
You're lying, Dave. You're lying. Clear the air right now on the radio.
No, it's the other Dave Vaynerchuk. And the other Dave Vaynerchuk and I are, him and I are friends. So we know each other very well.
It'd be funny if you were like mortal enemies.
We did hang out in L.A. one time. Keith O'Sullivan and the two Dave Vaynerchuks together. So it was cool.
That's awesome. Mm. Dave, thank you so much from both of us for giving us...
Not a problem, guys. I enjoyed it.
More than enough time, more than I could ever imagine. And like I said, from watching you as a kid, well, you know, an older kid, to talking to you now, it really is... a special episode, and I want to thank you so much for coming on. And I wish you, best of luck with the Lightning and with the foundation and with everything you got going on.
Thanks. I appreciate the time, guys. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I just, it's funny. You hear him talk about what he's done, and you're like, why am I talking to him right now? Like,
he's so nonchalant about it.
I mean, that's kind of been the message the whole time in this podcast. Once you get someone on, they're all just people, and they're all pretty much down to earth. Or at least the down to earth people are willing to talk, you know, like it's
exactly
it's kind of cool. So let's take a quick break and then we'll
come back.
All right. So with that was Dave Vaynerchuk. But before we get out of here, it's the Trivia Revolution and Verbal Shenanigans trivia question.
Oh, boy.
All right. You can answer this question and win a prize to a New Jersey craft brewery. Now, last week, Chris Ballew talked about working with Weird Al Yankovic. All right. Now, very simple question. What is Weird Al Yankovic's actual name?
Oh. I'm going to guess Al Yankovic.
Nope.
Dang.
Well, kind of, but I need his full name. What is Weird Al's real name? That is the Verbal Shenanigans Trivia Revolution question of the week.
And if you want to win that great prize, all you have to do is tweet back to both Verbal Shenanigans and Trivia Revolution with the answer to that question.
That's it, and that is the question. All right, so that is Dave Vaynerchuk.
He
kind of speaks for himself. It's like, I mean, we really heated up the podcast with the lunchbox talk before he got on.
Yeah, and he heated the ice and melted it, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely sucked the wind out of our sails.
Yeah, man.
All that Stanley Cup talk and
I wanted to talk about Capri Sun and how hard it was to get the straw in.
It would have been funny if we asked him what he takes his lunch in. Because if he's showing up at like the Tampa Bay Lightning offices with the lunch in the plastic bag, I don't know. It's a little weird.
That's a little different office than where you work and where I work.
Yeah, but you know, maybe that's how you achieve greatness. Like you start with the lunch box and before you know it's the clothes and before you know it you're driving.
That's the starting point?
Do you know the starting point? Because I would love to know the starting point.
business cards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because those have worked. But anyway, bro, let's get out of here. Let's let that episode speak for itself. Anything to promote?
I will promote a friend of ours, AtomicJunkShop.com.
Atomic Jump Shop. For a second, I thought you were going to be like, I thought you mispronounced a comic. I was like,
no.
Oh.
AtomicJunkShop.com.
You're promoting a comedy show?
No. I am promoting a website for comic books, comic book movies, comic book cartoons. And one of the writers on there is the winner of Win, Burr, Lose, or Draw, John Trumbull.
Win, Burr, Lose, or Draw, by the way, was the surprise 40th birthday party. We threw for Michael Berlew.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty funny. If you go back to that, I don't even know what episode that was, but you should check it out. But yeah, John Trumbull, funny comic. Funny guy, but yeah, info.
And if you wanted to check out some of his articles, it's AtomicJunkShop.com.
Yeah, he's a very good artist also.
Yeah.
So this will be up today. I guess I will promote one more time the... In a couple of weeks, we got the second show at the Brook Hollow Winery. I know Mike is a frequent visitor. Good people over there. And we're bringing a comedy show there. Second one with headliner Mike Morris. And then Ritu Chandra and Mike Ciccoli are going to be rounding out that lineup. So yeah, it's $25 for dinner, a glass of wine, and the show. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Easily. I mean, that's an easy night with a lady, you know?
Yeah, it's an easy night with the lady.
Yep, yep.
But anyway.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, let's get out of here. The best thing you guys can do, if you're just tuning in for the first time, or if you're a veteran of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, is just share it with your friends. Hey, Dave Andrewchuk was on this. This is pretty awesome. They talked about lunchboxes on this. This is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Scott has pineapple tongue in this episode. This is pretty great.
Yeah.
Share with us. You can listen on Laughable, iTunes, Stitcher. But also, you guys aren't stupid. Google Verbal Shenanigans and share it. And leave us a review if you can. Other than that, people, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
I see where you're going there.
You got it.
Yeah. Dave Andrewchuk likes rock music. Got it.